Okay, if anybody doesn't know me, my name is Noel Murphy. I'm the National Secretary of an organisation called the Independent Workers' Union. I'm also a member of the Trade Union Unite, and I've been asked to preside over this meeting here tonight. If anybody has an objection to that, would they please speak? Right. Mobile phones, please switch them off. And the entrance is where you came in. On my left is Noel Atkins, a shop steward in Waterford Glass. On my right, Patrick Phelan, likewise a shop steward in Waterford Glass. I'll ask both of them to speak for some time about the present plight that they're facing, and then we can throw this meeting over to some discussion in order that we can see how we can assist these workers in their present day situation. Firstly, let me acknowledge the absence of Councillor McBarry, who is absent because his mother passed away. So again, I take it as that it's accepted by this meeting is that condolences will be sent. Let me say is that as a trade union representative, over the last few months and for a longer period of time, we're all experiencing the hemorrhaging of jobs. We are seeing the cutting of workers' rates of pay. And in some cases, what we are seeing is that workers who are entitled to particular benefits are foregoing those benefits because there's a fear that if they look for their rights, that somehow they'll be victimised. There does operate a blacklist among employers. So anybody who is too militant in the workplace, if they leave their employment or if they're made redundant from their employment, in the situation of a reference being applied for, and if that reference is checked, anybody who hasn't behaved themselves in the eyes of the employer, that message will be passed along, and thus workers are even reluctant in that sense. So there's a terrible sense of fear. In that regard, it's very pleasant indeed, is that when somebody comes along and threatens the jobs of hundreds of workers, they suddenly decide to say no. That seems to be, now I could be corrected, but that seems to be what's happening at Waterford Glass. So now I'll introduce you to Noel Atkins.
First off, we're not used to doing these speeches. Some of us are just shop stewards. My normal profession is to blow glass. Okay, so bear with me, and if the Waterford accent is too strong, and you don't understand any part of it, we'll get a translator somewhere along the line. But basically, lads, I'm just going to give you a brief outline who I am in particular and who I represent, and I'll give you a brief overview of what got us into the situation where we occupied the gallery. My name is Noel Atkins, as you heard earlier. I'm employed in Waterford Crystal 29 years. I'm 44 years of age and I'm married with four children. That's enough for my own details. I won't go into the details of what got us to the stage where I went into the receivership, other than to say that over the last 20 years, we would have been familiar with ongoing disputes with the company in relation to downsizing, wage cuts, etc., etc. An indication of which is, when I joined the company in 1980, there was 3,500 people employed in Waterford Crystal. In the craft, you had 500 blowers and approximately 700 cutters. The blowers at the moment number 36. The cutters number in the region of 60. That's the decline that we've experienced over the last 20 years. But that's just giving you an indication of what we would have went through over the last 20 years. But nothing in your experience as a shop steward or an ordinary worker would have prepared us for the events that have taken place over the last 2 weeks. I go straight to the 5th of January, where we were informed that the company has gone into receivership. We would have met, that is the shop stewards, with the receiver, where he indicated to us that he hoped to sell the company, as in Waterford Wedger, as a going concern, that there'd be more money in it to him rather than liquidate the company. During that conversation with him, he outlined to us and he assured us on several occasions that irrespective of what direction he was going to take it, that he would inform us in a dignified manner and allow us to communicate with our members, irrespective of what direction it was taken. A week later, on the Friday, we met at Shop Stewart's, a normal meeting where we were going through the issues and hoping to maximise whatever could come out of the receivership. That meeting ended at 2 o'clock. At 2:20, most of us were in our cars, where the call came out that he was locking the gates around us as we speak. Now, when I say he was locking the gates, the tourist trail was still in operation and the factory. What he was actually doing is, as they went out, he was closing the gate. There was no formal communication with the shop stewards in any degree. At that point, which is approximately 2:20, we took a decision to get out and occupy the gallery as fast as we could, because we felt it was the only option left to us. And that's when we went inside that gallery, right? And I know the pictures and some of what you read in the media would have suggested that it happened at 2:20. The shop stewards managed to occupy the gallery first. When we looked back, we wondered would there be anyone coming behind us, because by text or by phone, we had informed the rest of the members. That question was answered within 20 minutes. There was 200 employees outside the door. At which stage, what I could only describe as hired thugs from Dublin were pushing their fingers in people's chests, saying, "You're not coming in here." Now, I don't know what kind of training these guerrillas got, but when you push somebody in the chest with 40 years of experience, you're going to get a reaction. That reaction was seen. Following that, we occupied the gallery and we agreed to run the gallery ourselves on a 24-hour basis. When I say run it, occupy it on a shifts of 6 hours if possible, if not 12 or longer. This was communicated back out. The following day, Pat, if I'm correct, the Saturday, the trade union movement in Waterford requests a solidarity protest outside the gallery. That solidarity protest, in the most horrendous weather conditions, amounted to 2,500 people outside the gallery. The following Wednesday, there was a march organised through the trade union movement in Waterford as well. 9,000 people attended that march. On the day, speeches were given by a number of people. But in my own view, and looking at it from the platform we were on, the array of people who were at it were unbelievable. I wondered personally, did anyone care when we went through the doors of the gallery? And were we just going to be left, fall asunder like other similar people in other factories, sometimes smaller, and felt so isolated that we were just left at home and nobody cared. The actions that were taken over the last week by the people of Waterford Crystal gave a great sense of pride to myself and the people that I work with. But when I saw the actions of the people of Waterford and the South East and how they responded to it, clearly you could see there was an undercurrent there that as soon as we pushed the doors open in Waterford Crystal, it no longer became a Waterford Crystal dispute. This was a dispute that was inevitable, in my opinion, it was going to happen. There's an underbelly out there of unrest from people who are just sickened time and time and time again at being the casualties in these situations and coming out the worst off. To give you the degree of the frustration and the anger being felt in the area, the population of Waterford City is 40,000. There was 9,000 people on that march. The real reason being, there's not one person in Waterford that hasn't had some connection to Waterford Crystal down through the years, or continues to still have that same connection. So before I hand it over to Pat, I just wanted to stress the single point that came out of it, that as soon as the doors were pushed, I've never ever seen the response that came from all over Ireland and England. Letters and phone calls of support. It was absolutely fantastic. And even coming down here tonight, it's deeply appreciated, because when you're isolated in a small place like that, and you're no longer on the front page of the newspaper, you go to page 2 and then you go to page 3 and then you're forgotten about. And what keeps this alive in this critical moment, and Pat might address it earlier on, where we're at in this procedure at the moment with the receiver, what keeps it alive is people saying that is not acceptable to treat people like that anymore. If we sit at home and say nothing, it will continue to happen time and time again. And if we were to believe the papers, it's going to happen an awful lot more over the next 12 months. So if the call to say stop has to start with Waterford Crystal, then hopefully that is the start of a campaign going forward by everybody, that no matter what job or what profession you're in, you will not be treated like that anymore. We'll no longer turn our heads and say, there's nothing you can do about it. Because that has to be a starting point. Yes, Waterford Crystal workers hit rock bottom last Friday when we were sacked and thrown out on the road in that manner. But Waterford Crystal workers will rise up, and they'll rise up with the rest of this country and the workers of this country, and give a message back out to them that we will no longer tolerate the situation that we are in. We will fight tooth and nail, each and every one of us. As a finishing point, if I was to ask, what can be done? We have a government at the moment that's sitting on its hands and allowing an indigenous industry like Waterford Crystal to go under. It's absolutely horrific if you go into the figures. The cost of solving the Waterford Crystal problem is somewhere in the region of 30 million. The cost of not solving it to the government is phenomenal, phenomenal. And I'd ask the question that if a company from America was to come into Ireland in the morning and say they were creating 300 jobs in any part of Ireland, what kind of money would be wrapped around those people to create those jobs? It would be phenomenal, the response. They'd fly them over personally, they'd carry them over. But yet here we have a company in Ireland with the potential of 400 or 500 jobs, and the government are doing shut all about it. I'll just finish it and leave you over the pat. I just say thanks very much on behalf of the workers in Waterford Crystal and the people of Waterford who recognise the support that we get from the surrounding counties and in the rest of Ireland, and it's deeply, deeply appreciated. Thank you.
Just to fill you in on where the situation is at the moment, it's effectively negotiations are ongoing now with the receiver, who represents obviously Bank of America, and this comes down to trade union organisation and where it gets you. He came back to us on Saturday night with an offer to effectively end the occupation and move on to the next stage as we see the struggle going, and that's to maintain a production facility in Waterford, maintain the jobs and keep Waterford Crystal in its home place. He made it what we regarded as a derogatory offer of some millions of euros on Saturday night, and obviously negotiations kicked off then this morning in Dublin. But it's in direct contrast to what happened in Wedgwood, where half the company, there are 365 people, when they were told they had no jobs, they were part of a very passive union, and a union that had no real history of resistance. They effectively said okay, and they walked home, they turned on their TVs, they read their newspapers and waited for the statutory cheque, which is somewhere £12,000 or £13,000. That was their reaction, and there's going to be no ex gratia payment for those 365 people. They're on the scrap heap in Britain in the same manner that they want to put the rest of us on the scrap heap in Waterford. But by virtue of the fact that we have trade union organisation and a trade union and a membership who weren't prepared to lie down, you do open the avenues then that someone has to deal with you. You're not going away, and part of that problem is that you have nowhere to go. We're in Waterford, none of us have anywhere to go. We're not computer whiz kids, we're not investment bankers. We can't move to London or New York or wherever. So that's where the row is. It's about an ex gratia payment that covers the 600 men and women that are going to be sacked, and also the struggle to get government on board to maintain Waterford Crystal in Waterford. We have 600 people who make the best crystal in the world, and the notion of just exporting it and selling it on willy-nilly to be it Eastern Europe, India, China, and all those impoverished areas of the world is not acceptable to us. For us to be thrown at the scrap heap and someone else to be exploited out of the way, because no matter where they make Waterford Crystal, whether it is in Eastern Europe or China, there's not going to be one shilling cheaper when you buy it for the next wedding you're going to, or the next gift you're going to buy for someone. Noel touched on the tugs that we had to deal with, because our de facto employers at the moment are Delight, the receiver's company. these tugs are effectively a private army that are used by the light. The face of the light is pinstripe suits and, you know, slick back hair, 500-pound shoes, all that nonsense, big cars. But these are their private army over here. The guys with the tattoos on their knuckles and all to that. They're the people who, on inquiry, evict women from houses for non-payment of rent or mortgages. They evict travellers out of campsites. They throw people hither and thither. And most normal security companies or decent security companies won't even touch the work that this mob gets involved in. So they're strictly an insolvency security firm. But they are thugs, and there's no other way of speaking about it. On Noel's one, on what do we need now in terms of solidarity? That's the amount of solidarity that we've got has been amazing. In a period of time, in particular during the Celtic Tiger, the powers that be and the business leaders of Ireland had said to us, there's no need for trade unions anymore. Look, they don't have trade unions in Dell and they're flying. They don't have trade unions in that company or this company and all the high-tech, high-flyers. They're all treating their workers perfectly well, which we saw a fortnight ago, how well Dell treated them. And just speaking to someone who's fairly close to the Dell situation, and this is how Dell fears organisation of workers. People who in Dell who felt that they should be dealt with collectively organised a meeting in a hotel in Limerick to gather the workers, to make it put together a claim in the way a trade union would put a claim together and serve it on the company. When Dell saw that happening, because I pointed out the fact that to this individual that there was very few at the meeting in the hotel, said Dell organised a meeting on the plant for the exact same time, the exact same night. They doubled the cap that they had on from 52 weeks wages to 104 weeks and gave out other concessions. So even the threat of a trade union knocking on Michael Dell's door and saying, I'm negotiating on behalf of those 2,000 workers or whatever it was, and you have to deal with us, we're not going away. The mere threat of that gets employers to come to the table and make concessions. So it's essential in the years and weeks, months going forward, that more and more people come into trade union organisation, whether it's Unite or SIPTI or Mandate, it's the organisation of workers can get a result. That we can't be discarded in the manner that the government thinks we can, and the Michael Dells and the Delights and all the rest. We can't allow ourselves to be discarded. And it behoves ICTU and the hierarchies of all of our unions to get out on recruitment campaigns and get people in, build the workers that have been dumped. And all the talk of all the sites in Ireland and the thousands of jobs that building workers have lost, the vast, vast majority of them walked off those sites with their hands swinging. No settlements, no extracia payments, no entitlements of any description. And they are situations that have to be confronted and have to be fought and dealt with in a united and in an organised way. In the last week, and this is important because I don't know the people in the audience, in the last week or fortnight, we've seen civil servants, teachers, firemen, the whole array being scapegoated in some way that if you take 5 or 10% out of their wage by next week, well then it's all going to be a level playing field again. That notion has to be fought not only by the public sector unions, it has to be fought by our own unions in the private sector, that taking 10% out of a fireman's wages, ostensibly because he's guaranteed a pension if he doesn't die in a bloody fire, is in some way going to improve the lot of someone that's getting fired onto the scrap heap in the private sector. And I think that notion is outlandish. In so far as what we need now, the solidarity we need publicity. We need people arguing the point, as I've been making, about being treated with respect, being treated with dignity, and being treated in an organised way and in a collective way. Because that's the only future that any of us have, and history tells us that. The financial support that we've got in Waterford has been massive. Noel has an Ulster bank account that Money is poured into it. It's been astonishing from as far afield, America, Australia, Great Britain, and all that. And the only other main argument is the moral argument that, as I said, we have to stay together. We demand on a very narrow way in Waterford Crystal, to demand that Crystal production stays in Waterford. That's the home of it. That's what we do best. And that in the wider array of it, that people collectively have to be treated better than what we've been treated up to now. Thanks very much.
Okay then, we've heard our speakers, and generally what they're saying is the importance of keeping Crystal manufactured in Waterford. It's a message that's important for all of us to maintain manufacturing jobs in the country. At the moment, the workers of Waterford have occupied the premises, and that will restrict the activities of the receiver and his hired henchmen. There's a possibility is that the workers of Waterford may go further, but however, that's for the workers themselves. That's their call on that issue. Maybe we can discuss that. People might have a lot of varying ideas here this evening. Okay, so speak your minds. Questions? Michael, yes.